Newsman, shall we do a podcast this week?
I think so. Why not?
I didn't want to just assume. I thought I'd just check in with you and see if you want to do it this
week.
Well,
how many have we done in a row, seriously?
Oh, it's over 70.
Whew. We're pretty predictable. We're back again this week.
Yep, here we are. In the news this week that caught our eye, we speak about a US comedian who really went hard after a public figure, really trashed this guy, which would have been one thing, but the guy has passed away.
Mm.
And only a few days ago, Bill Maher ripped into Stan Lee. So we will talk about that and why he did it and if he should have done it. I think I actually end up almost agreeing with Bill Maher a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got some good points to make. I wonder how early is it? It's too early to start criticising someone who's just passed. But
yep.
That's a point of discussion.
Also, some whippersnapper this week had an incredibly good idea that I wish I had had. And I actually feel like I have had the idea. But this guy's really run with it. And he's, I feel like he's making progress on the idea. It would be a car modification.
Yes.
Which I'm all for.
And it's all about possibly reducing road rage. Is that giving away too much, do you think?
No, not at all.
Yeah. It's all about tone. It's all about giving the right message when you're on the road.
Yeah, how we can reach a new level of just, you know, civility.
Mm-hmm.
If that's a word, on the road.
Yep.
And also we'll touch on the AFL draft, which happened it felt like it happened for most of this week.
Yeah. Well, I thought we had a fairly common feel for footy, Tim, but we'll find out that we're worlds apart when it comes to that major AFL event, I think.
You only just realise that I hate the draft.
Well, I know you like footy, but the draft, yeah, not in your good books.
Well, is the draft even footy? Anyway, we talk about that and throw in a bit of a top 10 list in there as well along the way. So anything else from you, newsman?
Nah, let's get into it.
Be brutally honest with me, newsman. Are you a beeper? When you get in a car, do you hit that horn?
I've actually put a Facebook post about this many years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, that I'm not quick enough.
Mm.
So I know there's times where I think, right, it's time to beep. But you know how there's, you got to give it a fair old shove.
You do.
You can't just sort of give it a caress, a flick. So no, I don't beep too much because there are times when I think, hurry up, but it's too late.
Interesting that you say that because I find the exact same thing. I'm an anti-beeper. Mm. I hate to use the horn.
Yes.
I will only use it if I can see a car is about to drive into me and they don't know I'm there.
Yeah.
And even then, sometimes, like you said, I think to be a really good beeper, you have to be on the red line the whole time.
Yeah.
You have to be alert. Like, you have to have one hand hovering, ready to beep at any moment.
Yeah.
And if you're like us, kind of, you know, not inclined to really beep.
Yeah.
Often the moment can pass you by before you've even done the beep.
It probably says a bit about personality as well. Like, as you said, you've got to be on the line. You've got to be ultra assertive on the road. Like, you're in the wrong, bang. You're in the wrong, bang.
Yeah.
Or in my way.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm probably that split second where I'm going, are they in the wrong? Too late. It's gone.
I reckon the majority must be in that camp because, I mean, I know there's a lot of carnage on the roads already, but if everyone was in the first camp, the aggressive, I mean, it would be Mad Max out there.
Yes.
I mean, for all the frustrations, most people manage to be pretty civil most of the time, or at least, you know, doesn't break down into anarchy.
I find the shaking of the heads probably replaced a lot of people's horn blowing. So you've cut someone off or something's happened. You look in your rear view mirror and you see the shaking of the head like, I'm superior,
oh,
you've done wrong, what are you doing on the road? Sort of.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know the other thing that people do, which they would think is polite, but which really annoys me, is if you're a pedestrian waiting to cross the road,
yeah,
car will drive up and stop, and you know they're going to let you go across. Yeah. Okay, that's really nice, great. But then the gesture they do is not like a okay, you can cross. Yeah. It's like a you will cross now.
Yeah, hurry.
And it's like, well, don't you know, pull up and then make this big show of doing a good thing by me, and then like be so aggressive with your gesturing. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I feel
you're right.
I know the feeling.
And probably someone like you, a common sense guy, has thought, I can wait the 3 seconds it's going to take for this car to pass.
Yeah, I didn't ask for them to stop.
I think we've got an hour in this, but I believe there is a reason behind what's triggered this beeping and road rage.
Very smart man thing. This week, Ben McClay, has written on a website called pedestrian.com.au that he is making a case for giving cars a second, smaller horn for polite toots. He goes through all the reasons why you might really need to blast a horn, which for you and me is if you are about to have a crash.
Yep.
But he says there are other situations that require the horn, like these ones. Perhaps the driver in front has not realized that the light has gone green. That is the most common one.
Mm. That's one where I would get on the horn, and that's because you've got a little bit of time. Like you go, come on now. Let's move it along.
But you don't want to blast the bejesus out. No. You just want a polite toot.
Mm.
Maybe you need to let a driver whose visibility is limited know that you are stopping to let them reverse out of their park.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you need to politely alert another driver that they are trying to turn down a one-way street. Sure. Maybe you've just seen a friend walking by the road. All occasions where you want to make a sound.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hi.
But you don't want it to come across as, bah!
Yeah.
You want a more, yeah. He says, using the horn in these situations is like using a sledgehammer to tighten the screws in a pair of glasses. Perfect analogy. Mm. He's even looked into this to the point where he's decided what key the horn should be. And he says, instead of a loud, abrasive middle G sharp, maybe that's what horns are at the moment, the secondary horn would let out the delightful tinkle of a B, one octave up. So instead of, maybe it's, this happy chirp would be used as a more friendly signal to your fellow man. Hey, buddy, no stress, just something I wanted to let you know about.
Yeah. Good.
So are you on board with this?
Yeah, it's another thing you got to think about. But yeah, I think I would be more happy to be horn happy. Yeah, horn freedom in hornmanship. if I knew that people would go, okay, he's just telling me to move on, the light's green.
Yeah.
Because have you had it on the other foot where I guess the times I've been beeped is when, someone's waiting for me. Mm-hmm. I've either not realised it's gone green.
Mm.
And as soon as I hear the horn, I've got the irrits with the person.
Yeah.
I'm like, ugh. Yeah. Gah. It was only 2 seconds. So I get really annoyed. But if they just said, excuse me, move along, I'd be, sorry, mate. I was daydreaming.
I actually thought you were getting really frustrated just then, just as you were recounting that. I could see just a flash of anger.
Because it's across your face. Is it annoying? Is it an annoying noise? Or has society programmed our brain into it being a hurry up, bossy, push, get out my way, danger?
It's probably both, but you make an interesting point because as society has become, how would you describe it? Since the car was invented, society has become perhaps more aggressive, more adversarial, perhaps. You know, most people would think now, as opposed to 100 years ago, everyone's a bit more on edge. And I think the evolution of the car horn has perfectly mirrored that, because when you think of the first car horn, which went something like this, aruga.
Exactly right.
Is that how you
That was
remember?
Exactly how I would go with a
aruga.
Early...
So that's what they used to be, if old-timey movies are to be relied on. And now it's far more severe. So, yeah, interesting.
The other thing about the sound, though, is, and that comes from me saying, is it programmed into our head? Have you spent much time in Asia, Web Guy?
Well, a little bit.
Yeah, like I haven't too much. Vietnam and Bali, places like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that gets to you when you enter these countries is how much the horn is used.
Oh, yeah.
So it's used to say, I'm coming around a blind corner.
Yeah.
There are three cars here. And at first you're thinking, oh, these people are ultra aggressive, but it's just, it's a way of going, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, rather than get out my way.
I hate to say this. I hate talking about places you've traveled to, but I did go to New York City one time.
Yep.
And I was shocked at how much beeping was going on in the traffic there. And I felt it was at the point where I started to feel like they were doing it for the benefit of tourists. Like you go to New York and think, yeah, man, I'm in the big smoke. It's going to be smoke coming up out of the grates in the road. Yeah. And everyone's going to be on their yellow taxi cabs are going to be beeping their horns constantly. And they totally are. They just don't stop beeping. And I felt like it's almost they feel obliged to just beep so much because they've got a reputation.
So you didn't get a feel of why they were doing it? Like, just seemed, hurry
just,
up? Or?
Just seemed fun. No, I don't know.
Well, there you go. We've managed to talk about car horns for 8 minutes and 45 seconds. I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, and could probably keep going, but for the benefit of everyone, let's leave it there, I guess.
Toot toot. Tim, this week, the AFL Draft, a event that divides the nation. Some people are totally bored with it. Some people are so excited about it because I guess it's the seed, the start of something that, or the potential for something special for your football club. I am somewhere in the middle. I'm interested in the top, say, 10, 20 picks. But after that, I'm not too fussed about who comes after that because, after all, they're all junior players and they're yet to really prove themselves under the pressure of AFL football. The coverage of it has grown over the years. It's just become a massive thing. And as impressive as these young fellas are, there's a lot of cliches, aren't there?
There is. You said it divides the nation. I feel like it maybe shaves a sliver off the nation.
Oh, really? Only just a slight percentage like it?
I reckon it would be maybe 5%.
Yeah.
Follow up. But that's a big enough market. When you think of everyone that follows AFL, 5% of all followers really into the draft, it's obviously a big enough audience that they feel like they want to turn it into a big thing, which they have.
And obviously, we are very interested in who will be the stars of the future. But at 18 years of age, you can't expect too much to come from the players or the clubs that's overly groundbreaking, really, with the interviews. They do a lot of interviews these days. And I believe that has inspired a bit of a list from you, Tim.
Sort of. I sometimes like to hit you with a top 10 list, usually when I have nothing else to talk to you about.
Don't mention that.
So, yes, today I'd like to present to you the top 10 things no one said at this year's AFL draft. Now, remember, no pity laughing.
Okay.
If it doesn't make you
I've got a couple here as well, so you can.
Oh, I am keen to hear those. Okay, let's kick it off. Number 10, top 10 things no one said at this year's AFL draft. Number 10. No dreams coming true tonight.
So who's saying that? The players or just the overall commentators looking at it?
Yeah. No one's saying it because what gets said on draft night is it's a dream come true.
Anyway,
I shouldn't have explained it. Number 9. I love how they wear their football Guernseys with long pants.
I never really thought about it. Yeah, it looks weird.
Number 8.
Oh, can I just go on that one?
Oh, please. Yeah.
I found it weird, and it's a silly thing, but there was one player, I think it was the top 10 or 20 up on stage, and one had a wristwatch on.
Oh, yeah.
Looked odd. Pants, watch, ready for dinner with the Guernsey on.
Just a jumble of an outfit, that is. Number 8 thing no one said at this year's AFL draft. I definitely understand what's happening here. It can get a bit involved.
It's got worse.
Yeah.
Because now there are clubs trading, and I was seeing people tweeting how excellent Adelaide's trade or whatever you call it. Yeah.
Nah, No one knows.
There are a few people just keep. We're all, a few of us just gone. Yeah, I get. Don't get that.
Yeah. Number 7. Each club really should bring a bigger entourage.
It is huge.
Number 6.
Yes.
I've thought about it for a while, and I've come to the conclusion that giving teenage boys hundreds of thousands of dollars to play football is a wise idea. Nope, no one said that.
Nope.
Number 5. I wish this would take longer. Number 4. You can really tell he was surprised to hear his name called. They say it's a surprise, but, you know, why are you even there?
Oh, no.
If you don't know you're going to be called. Anyway, number 3. I don't want to preface it, but this is probably my favorite thing that no one said at this year's AFL draft. Number 3. I'm just watching to get haircut ideas.
There are a lot of players there that will be looking back on the tapes.
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, what was I thinking?
Remorse.
Yeah.
Number 2. I wish we could see some footage to find out whether his friends and family are excited.
Tim, what is coming across in this is that you really don't like it. You really don't like it.
All right. Well, I've got a secret to let you know about in a second.
Okay.
But the number 1 thing no one said at this year's AFL draft. Oh, it's finished already? Did take 2 days.
But yeah, anyway. True. Now, see, my list, and it's only 4. I only had a chance. Mine, when you brought it up, I thought, oh, maybe you were talking about what the players might have said in the interviews rather than onlookers.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a couple of the players' responses that did not come up in the AFL draft.
Great.
Yeah, I am prone to homesickness. Because everyone is, I'm committed to this club.
Yeah, I'm really happy to be going to the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yep. And speaking of the Gold Coast, I'm actually looking forward to the nightlife on the Gold Coast. No.
No, they don't admit that. Even they would secretly be thinking that for sure.
Mm. I'm a little bit worried about the preseason. None of them say that. They're all, I'm ready to get into it and find out that I'm a bit below the mark with my fitness.
Super excited was the phrase I kept hearing a lot.
Yeah, and stoked.
Oh,
I thought stoked had sort of passed on.
Maybe it's coming back.
No. I am confident I will fill large shoes that have been left by a previous player.
Well, hang on, what are you saying? What are they saying?
Oh, no, there was one particular player and they said, oh, well, Tom Lynch. Oh, it was Jack Lukosius. Tom Lynch has left Gold Coast. Do you think you can fill the large shoes left or whatever?
Yeah.
There was only one player, and I didn't see all the interviews. There was only one player, and it was Port Adelaide's Connor Rosie, taken at pick 5. And people were, are you glad to be in Adelaide? And he almost was close to saying, I was kind of looking forward to the adventure of going somewhere else.
Ah.
He said, oh, particularly my family and friends are very happy I'm staying.
Yeah. But me, I wanted to fly the coop, get out of here.
Pretty much. But he held it back. But yes, it's full of, how would you describe it? It's not poo rolled in glitter, but they're dressing up something that probably is, I don't think they can go much bigger with it.
We've spoken for a few minutes now about the draft, a bit of back and forth. I said I had a secret to reveal. I didn't even watch the draft, not a minute.
No? Well, I could tell by the tone you're not a fan. Have you ever watched it?
Well, the thing is on Foxtel.
So only
rich people get to watch it.
Or people that are financially irresponsible, like myself.
Marcus, the passing of Stan Lee happened last week. We talked about it in last week's podcast.
Yes, comic book genius behind Spider-Man and a whole lot of other superheroes.
You paid tribute to the great man.
Did my best.
He's back sort of in the news this week because a US comedian / TV show host / public enemy number 1 this week, Bill Maher.
Uh-huh.
You familiar with him?
I think, yeah. It's not, his face isn't coming to me straight away, no.
Yeah. He's a guy who says things. to try and make people laugh.
Yep.
But he's also kind of got this political, he's very political.
Uh-huh.
He has copped the wrath of the internet this week because he basically supposedly trashed Stan Lee and ended up saying that Stan Lee was inadvertently responsible for the election of Donald Trump, which Bill Maher considers to be a bad thing.
Yes.
So interested to hear what you think of this because it's been very controversial. He's received a lot of flack for it. But I don't know if maybe he doesn't have a point. Let's look at this. He's penned a short little editorial, which went online over the weekend, and he said, I'm quoting just bits of it here. He goes to say, "The guy who created Spider-Man and the Hulk has died, and America is in mourning, deep, deep mourning for a man who inspired millions to, I don't know, watch a movie, I guess." So he's kind of downplayed Stan Lee's whole thing. And I wonder if maybe a bit of what he's doing here is just, you know, getting publicity for himself by making some outrageous comments. Put that to one side for a second. He goes on to say, talk about when he was a kid. "I've nothing against comic books, but the assumption everyone had back then, both the adults and the kids, was that comics were for kids. And when you grew up, you moved on to big boy books without the pictures. But then 20 years or so ago, something happened. Adults decided they didn't have to give up kids stuff. So they pretended comic books were actually sophisticated literature. I'm not saying we've necessarily gotten stupider. The average Joe is smarter in a lot of ways than he was than, say, 1940s. The problem is we're using our smarts on stupid stuff. I don't think it's a huge stretch to suggest that Donald Trump could only get elected in a country that thinks comic books are important." Is he out of line, or is there a point there, or has he managed to make a legitimate point and be offensive all at the same time?
I was with him up to that point, but I don't see how comparing people that find comic books, you know, part of their adult life is a direct correlation to voting in Trump.
I think he is hinting here at something that's not just the comic books. It's this sort of like man-child thing, you know, where it's, if you watch movies, sitcoms especially, there is this thing of like the male, and these are mainly like American movies, American shows. So I'm talking about the American male, but it's the same here in Australia, I guess, really, as well. The male adult hanging on to those things that he loved as a youngster.
Mm.
The comic books might be one. Video games, you know, wearing a backwards baseball cap. I don't know what it is. Watching movies, who knows?
So all that changes the mindset, do you think?
Well, he's saying, like, men are just not growing up, I guess, in his opinion.
Mm.
They're not getting to that phase where it's like, okay, I'm an adult now. I don't need to go out and have a night with the boys and drink six beers and watch the game. I'm not trying to make his point for him, but I'm just wondering if that's what he's talking about and if there's any truth in that.
Mm. Yeah, I'm obviously not looking into this deeply enough,
okay.
I guess, but... I do like the actual observation in general though. You obviously agreeing with him. Why do you think?
I haven't really thought of why I agree with him. It just feels like it's kind of true. It just feels like something that is kind of accurate, just anecdotally.
So is he basically saying that if you're in that mindset, if you're in this generation, Trump's very simple and black and white policies would appeal to you? Do you think that?
That's the next step, I guess. If you're kind of, if you are an adult who is thinking like a teenager, enjoying the things, you know, still stuck in that, the kind of same person you were when you were a teenager, then yeah, I guess you're susceptible to different kind of.
So you're thinking things. Build a wall that it's very simple.
Yeah, man, that's awesome, dude. I'm thinking now though, just on the fly here.
Mm.
If, you know, if adults, because, you know, there's this whole adulting thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm adulting now, as if, you know, as if getting yourself a driver's license is like a major achievement as a 30-year-old or something. I don't know. Maybe that is a symptom of us just being so lucky, because I feel like he's probably, you know, he might be thinking back to, you know, the golden era when, you know, men were men. And but you know what? For a long time, we haven't had the Depression. Mm. We haven't had two world wars. Like, those were years when stuff was like crazy, intense, and people, you know, obviously that is going to affect people. They were different people, had a totally different culture than us. And maybe it's because we have had the benefit of, you know, years and years of, you know, no world wars, certainly.
Yeah, come with war, come with recession, is a absolute need to work and care about every dollar that's spent, whether it's your dollar or the national dollar. And these are things that probably, you're right, a generation has been able to think, well, I'm living with my parents till 28, I've got the buffer zone, or, you know.
And we should be grateful for that. Like, it's a but it is a luxury, I guess, and maybe we shouldn't take it for granted. But
just a little side issue on this story. What do you have in your mind? What's a suitable time for someone, from when a person dies, before you can make jokes about them? Or
depends,
have a go at them?
Depends who it is and the circumstances. Stanley was 95.
Yep.
He had a great innings. His death was... I'm not sure if we even knew how he died. It seemed to be just a sort of a natural thing. So it wasn't particular. It wasn't violent or, you know, completely shocking in that sense. So it's a bit of a different case. He's probably, you know, is it wrong to say he's probably fair game fairly quickly?
Right. Okay. So the nicer you are, the more, I mean, he seemed fairly inoffensive, but he's been sledged straight away.
Yeah, and this is where you have to factor in Bill Maher's, I guess, also trying to generate his own publicity and getting the headlines himself, which is done.
Mm.
So you got to factor that in, that he could be just doing that as well. But I can sense that you're the more I draw you into this, the more agitated you get about Stanley.
No, not at all, because what I like comedians that really, you go, oh, you can't say that. I do enjoy that. But I was just curious where you think, but for you, straight in. I don't know. I don't know what the right period is. But
no, well, you tell me the joke and I'll tell you if it's too if it's too soon or not. That's really the thing, isn't it? Like, if it's funny, it's funny.
Yeah.
And if it's not, it's not. I don't think Bill Maher is funny here. I don't really think he's even trying to be funny.
No, just having a bit of a dig.
Yeah.